Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the likelihoods for 2009. Right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And now, they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools and our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effects. So whether we're calling this the Mosaic Law, or the law of God, or the common law, or natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which is the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about the money changer. I'm doing a report here on the January 2009 money changer lead article entitled Likelihoods. What should we be expecting for the year 2009? It's bad. It's getting worse, and it's probably going to get a whole lot worser before this thing turns around. So the author here of the money changer, Franklin Sanders, wrote an article called Likelihoods, and he said, we can't prepare for everything, so what's most likely to occur, and what should we be preparing for? Well, back in 1996, he wrote this. He said the following article first appeared in the July 1996 Money Changer. And I'm republishing it now because over and over coin dealers keep repeating the same false claims, which this article disproves. and these include, and we're going to take a look at some of these false claims made about gold and silver coin that are made by the people that are selling gold and silver coin. I wanted to illustrate a point here, and that is there are thieves, frauds, and charlatans everywhere. And just because you're out buying gold and silver doesn't mean that you're not going to be screwed, blued, and tattooed in the process. There are frauds out there by the droves and scores. Now, I advocate gold and silver, and most of the hard money people are out here advocating gold and silver, and then when you go out to buy it, there's a bunch of thieves out there. They're like identity thieves, stealing your identity so that they can steal your credit card number so that they can screw up your credit and take away your property. Well, I can't prevent all of it, but I can tell you some of the stories about it. And Franklin Sanders, back in 1996, wrote an article concerning numismatic coins. Now, a lot of times when people want to buy gold coin, and I had a student in here some time back now, he came in here and he wanted to buy some things, and he said, "Now, I've got these gold coins." And I said, "Well, okay, what kind of gold coins have you got?" And he said, "I've got old United States gold coins." Okay, I'm familiar with some of the old United States gold coins, and so he had a bunch of $5 gold pieces. Now, that's about a quarter of an ounce. Not quite, but almost. And then he had some $1 gold pieces. I mean, a $1 gold piece, it's so much smaller than a dime. It'll surprise you when you see the two side by side. But a $1 gold piece is 1/20th of an ounce of gold. And it's a real little coin. They were minted back in the 1850s and 60s. Well, clear back in the 1840s for that matter. And it's a little tiny $1 coin, just like you got a $1 silver dollar. That's a pretty good size coin. Then you've got this $1 gold coin. Boy, is that a tiny little dude. In fact, I think it's probably about the smallest coin that I've ever seen minted. But he wanted $140 for each one of those $1 gold coins. Now, I wasn't surprised. But if a gold dollar is worth 1/20th of an ounce of gold, 20 of them make an ounce, and you want $140 each for them, let's just plug in 140 times 20, and that is $2,800 an ounce. Now, as I speak, the price of gold today is about $900, and when this transaction took place 2 or 3 years ago, I think the price of gold was about $600. So here's the price of gold at $600 an ounce, and this guy wants to sell me these 30 gold, $1 gold pieces for $140 each, which is what he paid for them. He paid $140 each. Now, that's what we call a numismatic coin. Now, the tragedy of this is that even though it's numismatic and these coins are semi-precious or semi-rare, in order to have a very good coin, it has to also be graded. All of these coins had been graded as extra fine. As I recall, I'm not sure that any of them were extra fine. I think they were all VF20s. There might have been one or two EX coins in there, but or XF coins. But I'm not really sure that that was the case. So not only were they graded improperly, the price that was put on them was astronomical. Now, that's not to say that a $1 gold coin doesn't have more value than the 1/20th of an ounce of gold contained in the coin. I wouldn't say that. If you were a coin collector, you're somebody that wanted to collect them. We're collectors of antiques. My wife has a lot of antiques. Antique clocks and things like that. Clocks that sold brand new for $5.95 today are worth $600, $700, $800. But that's because they're very rare. There's not very many of them around. And there is a market out there for these rare coins, and it's called the numismatic market. And Franklin Sanders, who is a numismatic dealer, he's a gold broker, he's a silver broker, he's a newsletter writer, he's an economist, a farmer. And he writes an article here, and he says, "What is a numismatic coin and why you should not buy them?" So let me point out that I couldn't echo that statement any more heartily than, yep, that's right, I wouldn't buy them. Now, I'm gonna confess a little bit to you. See, I'm a numismatic collector. I actually collect numismatic coins. But I don't do it to make money or to preserve my wealth. I do it like burning airplane gas. Once I've spent the money, it's gone forever. It's like taking a Carnival cruise. Once you get back, the money's gone, and so are the good times. You've got memories. I don't deny it. You know, we've got great memories from our Hawaiian trips and our Alaska trips, but they're all memories, and the money that was spent is gone, and it's gone forever. Now, I'm not opposed to spending money. After all, that's what it's for. You've got money, it's to spend. But don't you think that you should get your money's worth? I'm not suggesting that you get more than your money's worth, or that you get an abnormal return, but don't you think that for the labor that you've put out, and you've exchanged it for the money that you've received, that for the money you've received, when you spend it, that you should get something equal to the labor that you expended? And that says that the laborer is worthy of his hire. All right, so there are people out there, though, that are selling these coins like they did to this man, and they really took advantage of him. So when I had to tell him, "Sir, excuse me, but they're not worth $140 each. They're worth closer to $90 each." Now, even 90 is a lot of money. Take 90 times 20, and that's $1,800 an ounce. Now, gold is $900 an ounce today. If I bought 20 of those today at $90 each, I'd be paying double what the value of the gold itself is worth. And we call that the premium. The premium. Now, would I pay a premium to buy those particular coins? And the answer is yes, I would. And of course, I would like to buy those coins for $75 rather than $90, but I might pay $90 for them, depending upon their condition. Because in numismatic coins, the grading of them, the condition of the coin is probably about, I'm going to say 90% of the value of the coin is wrapped up in its grade. It might not be 90 in every case, you know, it might be 75 or so. There's a gold value for gold coins. You know, let's take an 1890 $20 coronet gold ounce. They're not quite an ounce, but we'll call it an ounce. And if it's a common date and it's in, say, VF20 condition, it's probably just about worth its melt value. But if it was a San Francisco mint in 1893, as I recall, those were worth quite a bit more money because there wasn't as many of them minted. So the mint mark, the grade of the coin, condition, it could even be a coin as an American coin versus, say, a German or a French or a foreign coin. Depends upon who's buying it. It's caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. But all gold and silver coins are worth what we call the melt value. So when you take a look at the spot price of gold and it's $900 and you've got a 1 ounce coin, or you've got a bunch of coins and they equal 1 ounce, then it's worth about $900 because we can melt it down. You know, less commissions and less sandage and less melt. Why, you know, there's a number that comes out, and that's about what it's worth. But it isn't worth $2,800 or $3,000. That's what we call the premium or the blue sky. Now, here's what Franklin Sanders says, and this is why I recommend his newsletter, because these are the kinds of articles that you get that can tell you the answer to the riddle before you have to explore or find out for yourself. Now, the subscription to the newsletter is pennies compared to the thousands of dollars that you may spend buying these worthless coins called numismatic. And I say worthless because when you buy an ounce of gold, that's what you've got, an ounce of gold. Now, if it happens to have a particular mint mark, a particular date, and a particular grade, and you want to pay more for it, you should be aware that every dime you're paying above melt is just blue sky. And if you want to spend your money on blue sky, may I suggest a Carnival cruise or airplane gas? You might get as much enjoyment out of it. He starts off by saying that, number one, numismatic coins are exempt from government seizure by law. Well, that is totally false, and there is no basis in statute or regulation to support that claim. So when you hear someone say that numismatic coins are exempt from government seizure by law, tuck it away in your heart. Number two, it's been claimed that customer purchases of bullion gold coins must be reported to the government, but numismatic coins do not have to be reported. That is totally false. There is no report required when you buy gold, regardless as to whether it's bullion or numismatic. Only sales of certain gold and silver items must be reported, and then only when they exceed certain quantities or certain dollar values. Number three, it's often claimed that coins minted before 1934 are exempt from government seizure. That is totally false. There is no basis in regulation or statute to support such a claim. Number four, it's claimed oftentimes that United States $20 gold pieces minted before 1934 are exempt from government gold seizure. That is totally false. There is no basis in statute or regulation. In fact, it was mainly these coins which the government did in fact seize in 1933. Number five, it is often claimed that the law defines numismatic coins as those having a premium of 15% or more over their gold content. That is totally false. There is no basis in statute or regulation. A regulation was proposed in 1984, but it was never adopted. Number six, it's been claimed that the law defines United States $20 gold pieces as numismatic coins. The answer to that is it's totally false, and there is no basis in statute or regulation to support it. Now, those are the six common lies that are proposed or purported by people who are selling these numismatic coins. Now, you might want a copy of this article, and if you do, then you want to write to, you can send an email if you want to the Money Changer. Remember, their email address is franklin@themoneychanger.com. Or you can go to the Money Changer website, and it's www.the-moneychanger.com. Or you can call direct. I always like to pick up the telephone and call direct. It's 888-218-9226. That's 888, toll-free, 888-218-9226. And you might ask for a copy of this article called What is a Numismatic Coin? and why you shouldn't buy them. Now, going on in the article, Mr. Sanders points out, let the buyer beware. You should buy what is best for you, not what is best for some coin dealer. Over time, and in emergencies, all values tend to sink to their lowest common denominator. With gold and silver coins, that means their precious metal content. Premiums, especially numismatic premiums that depend on stable markets and widespread prosperity, cannot survive the pressure of declining incomes. Why spend money to buy premium that does not bring you any benefit? If you have numismatic coins, act now while you can to convert that numismatic premium into more gold and silver by swapping your numismatic coins for bullion coins. And you can do that here. You can call, fax, or email us a list, or tell us a list, or give us a list of your coins, and we'll calculate exactly how much gain in ounces of gold or silver that swap would net you. Now, I did that with the numismatic coins for this man that I'm telling you about, and I called Sanders and I said, okay, now here's a list of the coins and what's their numismatic value. So he put me in contact with a numismatic dealer in Los Angeles, California. And as I checked around, this dealer in Los Angeles was paying about the highest amount for these coins of the other dealers that I contacted. So I contacted three or four. And this one that Franklin recommended out in Los Angeles said, well, for those $1 gold coins, here's what I'm paying. And for the $5, here's what I'm paying. For the $10, here's what I'm paying. If, in fact, they do grade out to be XF. And, for common date coins. Now, here's another thing that you should keep in mind about these numismatics. The coin can be beautiful. It can actually be uncirculated. Or it may even be an MS60, or sometimes an MS63. Beware when somebody says this is a 65, 68, 69, or proof coin, because back in the old days, here in America, they didn't make coins that good. In fact, there were a lot of counterfeit American gold coins out there, numismatic coins, but you probably won't find any of the common dates. When they counterfeit these, they want to counterfeit the very rare dates and mint marks so that they can get big premiums. For instance, there are gold coins, $5, $10 gold coins and so on, that are worth thousands and thousands of dollars because of their rarity. You know, if the mint only turned out 20,000 Carson City $5 gold pieces in a particular year, well, those gold pieces are worth a lot of money. So counterfeiters counterfeit those. You should be very, very cautious when you're buying numismatic coins. And you should make sure that they're in a sealed case and that they have been graded by one of the three grading agencies. They check them for authenticity, and then they actually guarantee them if you were to at some time buy a counterfeit that's been graded by one of these three agencies, they will pay you for that. It's like having an insurance policy. Now, they're not selling insurance, they just make a guarantee that if you buy a coin graded by us and it's a counterfeit, well, then we'll pay you that loss. Now, with that much in mind, you need to be a professional. If you're going to deal in numismatic coins, if you're going to be a collector and collect numismatic coins, you need to know what you're doing. Otherwise, you want to do like I do. I collect Indian head pennies, but I just collect the Indian head pennies as a hobby. I'm not trying to make money at it. The other day I went in and I bought some Indian head pennies. One of them was $4. I paid $4 for a penny. And I needed that penny to fit into a particular hole. You know, it said 1894, Indian head penny. And so I just bought a little common grade, low grade coin, and put it in that hole. That's $4. You know, I could have gone over to TCBY and bought a double decker or three scoops ice cream for that $4 and made myself fatter than I am already. I didn't need the ice cream, and I probably didn't need the penny, but the penny didn't impact upon my health adversely, and it brings me great joy. I like to look at my coins, and I like to fondle them, and I just like the satisfaction of having all of them that were issued. Just like, you know, people like to collect marbles, or they collect anything. But on the other hand, when somebody's trying to sell you these numismatic coins as an investment because they're gold or they're silver, let's be wise as serpents and harmless as doves, and let's get some information. That's why these newsletters are so valuable. Because after I read this article, I said, oh, this is what they're doing. This is the way they're selling that blue sky. This is the way they're selling that premium. They actually make you believe that these coins are the greatest thing since sliced white bread. All right, now if you've got the Mona Lisa, that's a very valuable painting. But when everybody's starving to death, you're not likely to find very many buyers for the Mona Lisa. You'll find more buyers trying to find something to eat. Now here's the law as it relates to numismatic coins. Collecting coins can be a hobby that's both fascinating and rewarding. In the past 25 years, investors have discovered the exotic world of numismatics and jumped in with big bucks. Riding the wave of mythical profits in numismatic coins, dealers back in the 1970s set up boiler rooms where salesmen, armed with Watts lines, pushed quasi-numismatic coins like U.S. silver dollars or $20 gold pieces. And I say quasi-numismatic because so many of these exist that they aren't truly rare coins. Although they carry big premiums over their gold or silver value, and they can dance and jump when the gold bull is raging. But the problem is, gold and silver dealers keep on convincing people to buy, and the more expensive U.S. $20 gold coins that they buy, on the basis that they confer some special benefit because they're numismatic coins. Now, let me ask this, what difference does it make? When gold was confiscated in 1934, they say numismatic coins were exempted. Well, 2003 is not 1933. Now, I don't find that logic very convincing. The exemption in 1933 was very vague. Gold coins having a recognized special value to collectors of rare and unusual coins came from presidential proclamation made on 4/5/1933. Worse yet, our government tyrants are notoriously arbitrary. If they confiscate gold a second time, why would you expect them to be consistent? And besides, who will turn in his gold if his family's safety depends upon it? And finally, in 1933, U.S. $20 gold pieces comprised the largest part of the bank's gold reserves, and most assuredly were not exempted from seizure. And 2003 is not 1933, and in 1933 gold formed the basis of the banking system's reserves. Today it does not, and the government propaganda machine has been churning night and day since 1933, proclaiming gold has been demonetized. In 1933, Roosevelt found it necessary to seize the gold to reliquefy the banking system. Today, that isn't necessary. Government today is performing the same magic with computers, creating money out of thin air, bailouts, TARPs, so that the government gains no advantage by seizing gold today. It's totally unnecessary. They can create it by computer. However, a seizure would stir up a mammoth wasp's nest. Most gold and silver owners don't trust government to begin with. That's why they're holding gold and silver coins. Now, would they timidly turn in their gold at the government's call? I don't believe it. Seizure would be an enforcement nightmare, And would the government find the little gain of gold seizure worth the effort of swatting all those wasps? It just doesn't seem very reasonable to me, even for the notoriously unreasonable federal government. So the concepts that are being propagated today by both government and the numismatic dealers out there are fighting the last Great Depression of the 1930s. The government's fighting it because they don't want you to buy gold at all. Stick with paper. The numismatic dealers want to sell you these numismatic coins, which in reality are not really numismatic. That is, they're what we call common grade coins. There are literally millions of them out there. And it's true, they do carry a little bit of a premium, but they sure don't carry a 25% or 30% or 50% premium. And oftentimes, when you're buying numismatic coins, you'll have to pay the dealer a 25% commission to have him buy or sell the coin. When we're dealing in ordinary bullion coins, that same commission is 4%. Now, it can vary up or down depending upon the coins and the dealer and the amount of money that you're talking about. But plan on a 4% commission for bullion coins, a 25% commission for numismatic. And if you have to melt the coins down, would you rather take a 21% hit or a 4% hit? It's a choice you have to make. All right, let me give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are maybe hostile, or they could be political or religious. Sometimes they're economic or sectarian, and they can be racial or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about what is a numismatic coin. And put out by the money changer, it's Franklin Sanders. And a numismatic coin is what we call a collector's coin. And there's a huge premium on some of them. Sometimes the premium can amount to hundreds of times the face value of a coin. it's not uncommon to have, oh, say, a $10 gold piece, say MS-63. I'll stick with MS-60. I think I saw one $10,000 one time for a $4 gold piece minted back in 1873, $4 gold piece. Maybe from San Francisco or someplace. You know, MS-60 was around $10,000. Now, that coin may be counterfeit. You never can tell. There wasn't very many of them minted, so they're rare. That's why they're $10,000. And this $10 gold piece only has about a half an ounce of gold on it. So its melt value is about $400, $450. And the premium on this thing is, oh my God, you know, $9,500 more. So tuck that one away in your heart, because there's a lot of better value out there if you just knew what to look for and what it is that you should be thinking about buying. So a subscription to one of these newsletters, such as Sanders Money Changer or Bill Buckler's Privateer, or Bob Chapman's International Forecaster. And they're not the only ones. Listen, there's a lot of guys out there that are advocating gold and silver that can probably be of help. Howard Ruff, James Turk, Nadler, Franklin Sanders, Gary North, Don McElvaney. You know, just to name a few, and there's probably 50 more of these newsletter writers out there. Some of them buy and sell gold. Some of them are dealers or brokers. Many of them aren't. But when you subscribe to their newsletters, or when you write to them and ask them questions, you know, they'll give you a pretty straight answer. And when somebody is selling numismatic coins, you need to ask yourself, is this guy working in my best interest, or is this in his best interest? When somebody is selling you the gold or silver, what is the brokerage commission? What should the brokerage commission be? What's average in the industry? What's normal? And I just told you the answer. It's about 4%. Now, it can go higher or lower than that, but you know, by the time you're out here paying 8%, that's a pretty big brokerage fee. And I think I'd be looking around for another broker, another dealer. So you tuck that one away in your heart. Now, he goes on to say, this is Franklin Sanders, says, what about definitions? But there's a new twist on things. In the past 18 years, dealers have been trying to hammer out regulations with the IRS about the definition of numismatic coins. And many dealers aver that some government regulation defines a numismatic coin as one that costs more than 15% over its gold or silver value. We'll examine this claim more closely in a moment. But relying on that definition, gold and silver dealers urge you to buy U.S. 20s, which sell at far more than a 15% premium. But so far, nobody has noticed this other larger loophole. Lots of the Gold Bullion Coin Act of 1985, which is known as Public Law 99-185. It was enacted December 17, 1985, and you'll find it at 99 Statute at Large 1177, or codified at 31 U.S.C. 5101, 5111, and 5112. Provided for minting the American Eagle 1 ounce, half ounce, quarter ounce, and 1/10 ounce gold coins. Section 2-3 provides for purposes of Section 5132A of Title 31, all coins minted under this subsection shall be considered to be numismatic items. Now, if you go to Title 31, Section 5101 through 5112, all new coins coming out of the West Point Mint, both gold and silver, are by law numismatic coins. So why do you have to pay a big premium to buy numismatic coins from a coin dealer? The bottom line is, it's just not true. Or put another way, it's just a damn lie, as Mark Twain used to say. Now, the Liberty Coin Act of July 9, 1985, 31 U.S.C. 5112 authorized the 1 ounce silver coin, commonly called the American Silver Eagle, at section 202G. It contains identical language. By statutory definition, then, the American Eagle coins, both gold and silver, are numismatic coins, so says 31 U.S.C. section 5132A1, which requires the Secretary of the Treasury to apply proceeds from selling numismatic items to cost of making them. Boys and girls, they're snookering us. When they tell us that these are numismatic, and that's why you want to pay this premium, and you want to remember that all of the new coins are numismatic by law. Next item. Here's another kicker. I nearly wore out a law school librarian trying to find the regulation that defines a numismatic coin as one that sells for more than 15% over its bullion value, but we simply couldn't find it. Now, thanks to the Industry Council for Tangible Assets, known as the ICTA, I found it in a proposed regulation, which was proposed regulation 26 CFR 1.6045-1 on page 647 and 648 of the Federal Register, volume 49, number 3, enacted on January 5, 1984. But the proposed regulation was never adopted, and the current 26 CFR 1.6045-1 contains none of that language. And I couldn't find it in any IRS letter, rulings, or other decisions either. If it exists, neither the law librarian nor I could find it. And not too long ago, a customer told me that a dealer had faxed him a copy of the proposed regulation, claiming that his company's corporate attorney said it was current law. When the customer asked for a letter from the attorney stating that fact, the salesman said that wouldn't be possible. So what is the bottom line? Contrary to what most gold and silver dealers think, U.S. 20s, the gold coin pieces, and the silver dollars do not legally qualify as numismatic coins. Let me repeat that. Here they are telling you that these old Coronet and St. Gaudens $20 double eagles are numismatic. As a matter of law, they are not numismatic. And they're telling you that the new coins are not numismatic when, as a matter of law, they are numismatic. How do you like that? Just exactly 100% backwards. And these guys are out here in good faith telling you, we believe that, and here's the story. And God knows, you know, they may actually believe their own lies. I don't know. And so I thought, well, let me tell you where this is coming from. And here's why a newsletter like the Money Changer pays for itself over and over again. This guy that I'm telling you about over here, when he presented all of his numismatic coins, now, I took his numismatic coins. I didn't take them at the values that he wanted, but I did take them for him. He took quite a bath on the value of his coins. You know, when you're paying $140 for a $1 gold piece that you believe is going to sell for $140 or later for $180 or $200. As Sanders points out, in good times, in boom times, when people have a lot of money and the economy is really singing and cooking, yeah, you can get that kind of money. But when you're in depressed times, when times aren't good, you not only can't get it, you're going to take a hell of a bath. And I mean, it's going to be shocking to you. And oftentimes people will say, well, I want to come to your school, Mr. Gordon, and I've got these gold coins. And when I tell them what they're worth, I'm sure that oftentimes they think that I'm one of the biggest thieves that God ever put breath into trying to take advantage of them. And, you know, if I take your numismatic coin, what that means is that I got to take it to the gold broker and I got to sell it to him. And am I going to get $140 for a $1 gold piece? And the answer is no. I'll be lucky if I get 90. And so a lot of times I'll take people's coins in. I pay them more than they're going to get from the gold broker, and I take a little bit in the short. So that's like offering a discount for my product. That's what that boils down to. I'm just saying, well, I'll give you a little discount here, 10% or something like that. Now, when you buy gold, we expect the price of the gold to go up. That's because, not because the price of gold or gold's getting more value, it's valuable, it's because the paper money is becoming worthless. And all you're doing by buying gold and silver is trying to preserve the hours of labor that you have already expended. So if you're sitting here with a 401k, say you got $100,000 in your 401k, over the next 4 years, you can expect the value of that $100,000 to shrink to $50,000. Even though over the same period of time, you may add to it and you may have $200,000 in your account, but you'll end up with $50,000 worth of purchasing power. That's what the bottom line is. That's why all of the newsletter writers and all the hard money advocates are suggesting that you convert your paper today to gold. Then when the price of gold goes to $2,000 an hour, you haven't made anything, but you haven't lost your purchasing power. Now you have your $100,000 worth of purchasing power protected. And in some cases, you make a little profit. I noticed this year in 2008, the inflation rate was 12%. The price of gold went up by 5.6%. How much money did I make? Well, in purchasing power, I lost about 7%. So, but I only lost 7%. Most of you people out there lost 12%. It's just that my gold produced a little bit of profit this year, you know, paper profit. The truth of the matter is, if you take a look at gold over the last 7 or 8 years, and I hear people telling me, oh, boy, the price of gold is up 3 times over what it was in 2000. Okay, but it's up 3 times. It's simply equal to 1980. And between 1980 and 2000, boys and girls, we lost 50% of our purchasing power. And from 2000 to 2007, we lost 30% more. So we're only talking about 35 cent dollars to start with. So when the price of gold tripled, you didn't make 10 cents worth of profit. Nothing. You're still a loser. You're just not as big a loser as you would have been if you'd have stuck with paper. See, you only lost about 20% of your purchasing power. The guy with paper lost about 80% of his. That's all. So you're better off, but you still haven't made any profit yet. Now let's take a look at the cash reporting story. Cash reporting, as opposed to broker reporting, is a hog of a different color. Cash reporting requires certain entities to report receiving cash, that is, Federal Reserve notes in amounts greater than $10,000 or $3,000 in some circumstances. For this purpose, the government is not interested in whether you're buying precious metals or whether you're buying automobiles or manure. They only want to know that you plunked down cash, $100 bills. The cash reporting requirements of 26 U.S.C. 6050-I supposedly have companion regulations at 26 CFR Part 1, Section 6050-I-1C-7-I. But note that the word cash has a special definition in this law. In a December 30, 1993 letter, the IRS Assistant Chief Counsel for Income Tax and Accounting, Vincent Cardella, wrote to the Industry Council for Tangible Assets, the ICTA, as follows. He said, quote, Section 1-6501-1C1 of the Treasury Regulations defines the term cash, in part, to include the coin and currency of the United States or any other country which circulated and are customarily used and accepted as money in the country in which it was issued. This term cash does not include bullion coins, such as gold bullion coins issued under the Gold Bullion Act of 1985 at 99 Statute 1117, nor does it include commemorative coins, such as coins issued under the Statue of Liberty Ellis Island Commemorative Coin Act 99 Statute 113 in 1985, also known as the American Liberty Coin Act. But gold and silver American Eagles are legal tender. Now, as crazy as this sounds, this means that you could walk into a Mercedes dealership, plunk down 201 American Gold Eagle coins with a face value of $10,050 and a paper money value of $80,400, and it would not be a reportable transaction. Did you hear that? Let me repeat that. When we take a look at what the law actually says concerning numismatic coins and versus the cash reporting requirements. Now, as crazy as this sounds, and this means that you could walk into your Mercedes dealership, you could plunk down 201 American Gold Eagle coins with a face value of $10,050 and a paper money value of $80,400. And it would not be a reportable transaction. So wait, kids. Wait, kids. He says, don't try this at home. Even though the IRS assistant chief counsel says so, don't rely on it. But it certainly appears that there is a hole in the cash transaction reporting laws big enough to drive a 747 jumbo jet through. And the simple way to avoid, not evade now, but to avoid cash reporting is to use American Eagle gold coins and American Silver Eagle coins in everyday transactions. And crazier still, since customs is a part of Treasury, do you suppose that American Eagle gold coins are exempt from reporting as cash when you leave the country? Now, of course, this may sound crazy, but it's the government shooting themselves in the foot. They hate gold and silver because they want to discourage people from using it. Then they write it out of the regulations, but only succeed in making gold and silver more private than their phony paper money. Franklin Sanders, 1996. Now, let me tell you that my research confirmed what Sanders just reported here. And if you'd like to have a copy of this article, it's called What's a Numismatic Coin and Why You Should Not Buy Them. We also cover this in our business school and our tax and status school in greater detail. We actually take Title 31, Section 5101 through 5112, and put it into chapter form and sit here and run it by such things as the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeal in Hawkeye Bank versus Pacific Mutual Indemnity, and cover with detail the use of gold and silver coin. And I'm here to tell you that Sanders is exactly correct. He was correct back in 1996, which was the year that the Hawkeye Bank case came out. I don't know that he knew that what his article was saying was true, accurate, and correct, because the Eighth Circuit Court said so. I'm just reporting it to you after the fact because he's the guy that first reported it. Now, the Ten Commandment model of economics is a superior model. And it's superior because it follows this gold and silver requirement. They're called just weights and balances in the Bible, in the Scripture. And if you're using commercial paper, like Federal Reserve notes or mortgages and stocks and bonds, those are reportable. Those are the cash transactions that if you don't report, you can go to prison over, not the gold and silver. Now, isn't that just special? So if you want privacy, there is privacy in gold and silver coin. There is no privacy in Federal Reserve notes, stocks, and bonds. If you want a taxable transaction, deal in Federal Reserve notes, checks, credit cards, and money orders, because those are unjust weights and balances, and those are reportable transactions. Those are taxable transactions. Gold and silver isn't. So you tell me that this God up here, the Creator, now didn't have his head screwed on straight when he told us to use gold and silver coin. Huh? So I just thought I'd pass that one on to you. Now, listen. This is called the Money Changer. I'm going to give you this guy's name and address again. The Money Changer. You're looking for the January 2009 edition called Likelihoods. What's likely to happen in the year 2009? And he's got his ideas about preparing for it, and I've commented on those. He says it's unlikely that we'll have hyperinflation. I disagree. I think we're going to have hyperinflation. Furthermore, I think Franklin Sanders is a hopeless, well, I'm going to say ideologue, but what he's in effect saying here is that he has great confidence in the future, when he says that, well, I'm expecting bad times for about 4 years. In fact, here's what his statement was. He says, common sense becomes epidemic. The next 4 years will be bleak. I call that optimism. If you think this thing's only going to last for 4 years, I say that is real optimism. I don't see that in the tea leaves at all. Now, maybe that's the way it'll work out, and we all hope for the best. Now, Sanders is a good old boy, and I'm recommending his newsletter. I read it every month. I like what he's got to say. And I especially like these articles that he puts out. He's one of the few guys that puts out these kinds of articles, like this, What's a Numismatic Coin? But almost every month, he'll have something in there like that. And this month, it's Surviving Hyperinflation. And he's got a dynamite article on, well, what do you do when you've got this hyperinflation? It's the god-awful, single worst thing that can happen to you. But when it happens, you should be prepared for it. And here's what you do, step one, step two, and step three. And he's the kind of guy that does the legal research and says, well, okay, let's go find out. Here's what they're telling you. Numismatic coins are exempt from government seizure by law. Well, he went out and looked it up, and it ain't so. They are seizable, and the government can enact a law in the morning if they want to. They have in the past, and they may again in the future. That doesn't mean that those of us that have a couple of gold coins are going to turn them in. It just means that we'll just go into the underground economy, which is where they're at right now anyway. Nobody's out here dealing in gold coin at Walmart. All the gold in the country is in the underground economy, which, by the way, totals about $2.5 trillion a year, maybe more. It's a vibrant economy. I'm one of the few guys around. I'm not complaining about the economy. The economy's great. The economy is working perfectly down here in the black market, down here in the underground economy, down here in the free marketplace. None of us are complaining. The only people that are complaining are you people that are trying to deal with the banks like Bank of America and Citigroup and so on. And you're being laid off at General Electric and General Motors. You people are complaining. You people that deal in Federal Reserve notes, stocks, bonds, mortgages, banks, credit cards, debt, usury, interest. You're complaining. You're saying, oh my God, things are bad. Not down here on the street, they aren't. I'm not complaining. And you won't be either if you go back to the Ten Commandment model, which is what our forefathers set out in our Constitution. Remember, this is the Money Changer. Telephone number 888-218-9226. Once more, that's 888-218-9226. Hey, I'm out of time again, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.